WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. A storm heading for the Gulf Coast is upgraded to a tropical storm this morning and named Claudette. Rick Blake with the National Hurricane Center says that region is in for 5 to 10 inches of rain.
This could cause life-threatening flash floods from coastal Mississippi and Alabama into the far western Florida panhandle.
Tropical storm warnings have been put in effect along the Gulf Coast. A legal win for the cruise ship industry and the state of Florida. The Sunshine State filed a lawsuit challenging the CDC's order, making it difficult for cruise ships to sail during the pandemic.
A federal judge in Tampa said the CDC went too far with its interpretation of the Public Health Service Act and that the state of Florida is likely to succeed in litigation. He said as of July 18th, the CDC sail order will become a recommendation or guidance for the cruise industry, and that the agency has until July 2nd to propose a narrower rule for cruise ships in light of the pandemic. After the judge's ruling, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said that this court ruling is a victory for all states that want to preserve their rights in the face of unprecedented federal overreach. Jessica Rosenthal, Fox News.
A trial in a lawsuit filed against the organizers of the deadly Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville will be held in that city. A federal judge denied a request by the defendants to move the trial to Lynchburg or Roanoke. He said many of the plaintiffs lived, worked, and studied in Charlottesville, where they alleged they were injured. Today is Juneteenth, which celebrates the freedom of all slaves in America. President of the NAACP Loudoun Branch, Pastor Michelle Thomas, says while black people are no longer enslaved, some are seeking other kinds of freedom, including economic, emotional,
think about the number of African Americans that are in, you know, imprisoned in this country. Obviously, freedom is still a pursuit for many people in America.
Juneteenth celebrations start in Loudoun County at 9:30 this morning at the courthouse. The Sandy Springs Slave Museum is hosting tours today in honor of Juneteenth.
It seems as though Juneteenth kind of coincides with the reopening of America after the pandemic.
Reynold Smith, a museum board member, says for Juneteenth, the tours are free and groups from other nations will be performing.
Because one of the charges of the Sandy Spring Slave Museum is reminding people of the African diaspora.
Smith says slaves from Africa were taken all over the world. Barbara Britt, WMAL and WMAL.com.
If you get a call from someone claiming to be from the Frederick County Sheriff's Office saying there's a warrant out for your arrest, don't fall for it. Sheriff Chuck Jenkins says it's a scam.
The caller is asking the person to pay for the warrant with gift cards or Green Dot cards and then giving instructions how to do this. The callers are using, again, Frederick County numbers.
The sheriff's office says the scammers built one woman out of 12 grand. WMAL Sports, the Nationals beat the Mets 1-0. The Capitol Police officer who led rioters away from the Senate chamber on January 6th, Eugene Goodman, threw out the first pitch in last night's game. Traffic and weather next on WMAL. WMAL traffic, here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In D.C. on 295, 395, and 695, good news for your Saturday morning, no delays. On the Maryland side of the Beltway, on the inner loop and on the outer loop, from Prince George's County through Montgomery County, you're not going to tap the brakes. Between the two beltways, on the BW Parkway and on 95, that is clear northbound and southbound. And on 270, from the beltway north to Frederick, no delays on the northbound side or on the southbound side. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy, warm, and muggy today. We're expecting high temperatures back in the upper 80s under partly cloudy skies. We'll also have the possibility for some afternoon showers and storms. Some of them may be strong to severe, damaging winds, the primary threat. Later on tonight, some isolated storms possible, lows back around 70 degrees. For your Father's Day, partly cloudy skies. Again, the chance for some isolated afternoon storms. Keep the StormWatch 7 app handy, otherwise hot and humid, highs around 90 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett, the StormWatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Now, the Saturday morning update. 105.9 FM, WMAL.
It's hour two of the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Thank you for being with us on a holiday weekend. A happy Father's Day, a happy first weekend of summer, and Juneteenth, now a national holiday. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us. He is the White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
All eyes on President Biden this week in his European trip, starting with the G7, then the NATO meetings. Finally, his meeting with Vladimir Putin. And as usual, the different media outlets had vastly different views on how it all went. You've been following American presidents on overseas trips and summits for decades. Your opinion of how the week went for Joe Biden, culminating in the summit with Vladimir Putin.
Well, it's a Rorschach test, Rick. You see it at what you want. Admirers of the president hailed him for bringing up the human rights issue, notably protesting the arrest and imprisonment of Putin opposition leader Alexei Navalny, who later went on a hunger strike in prison. Now, people in the dissident community in Russia privately said his complaint was not about the imprisonment, per se, but just the way that Navalny was seized and put in prison. In other words, Biden didn't call for his release, but protested the form of his arrest. Putin said he was an enemy of the state who was planning to overthrow the government, and that he knew what he was getting into when he came back to Russia from Germany. So call that part a draw. The president also said that he was opposed and protested about cyber attacks in the United States originating from Russia. Cyberspace is free, Putin replied. And again, there's no concrete action or agreement that comes out of this. There were other things, but for the most part, the Putin-Biden summit focused on human rights issues and the different views of the two leaders about that subject. Is there any substance that came out of it? Hardly. It is not exactly Khrushchev meeting John Kennedy at Vienna when he perceived the American president as weak, and that emboldened him to both strengthen the Russian hand in Berlin and put missiles in Cuba. Putin is not likely to take that action. However, I spoke to Mr. Pavlionis, the chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee of the Lithuanian Parliament and himself a former ambassador to the U.S. His biggest fear is that Putin will strike and annex Belarus with the help of that country's president, Alexander Lukashenko, whom he said would do anything to keep his throne. If Putin got any perception that Joe Biden was politically weak or not up to the game, he feels he would make a move because Putin always strikes when the American president is at a low point. In 2008, he went into two provinces in Georgia as George Bush was a lame duck president, and in 2014, when Barack Obama had just taken a thrashing in midterm elections, he moved into Crimea and eventually seized it from the Ukraine. So keep eyes on Belarus. But overall, for now, it appears to be a standoff and nothing more.
What is it with Biden? Whenever he answers reporters' questions, he has to take out his little list and acknowledge that his handlers have prepared the list with the names of the people he's supposed to call on. Is that a page from his former boss's playbook?
Yes, in the past, Barack Obama would bring out the list and, in fact, look at it carefully to see that he pronounced the names of reporters correctly. Everybody knew it. It was a carefully scripted event, and the president often used the podium and the famed teleprompter, which he later poked fun at himself for at the White House Correspondents Association. Donald Trump, on the other hand, just took it as he saw it. He would call press conferences, his shouting back at reporters, at the helicopter, Air Force One, in the White House. He would take questions from the pool reporters when they were there to watch him sign bills or greet foreign visitors, and he would welcome any subject and call on anyone he saw near him. And it was very spontaneous all the time. So it all depends on who's president. I think it's a safe bet to say that Joe Biden takes his cue from his old boss, Barack Obama, rather than the person that he followed as president, Donald Trump.
All that said, he got into a dust-up with Caitlin Collins from CNN, resulting in a smackdown in which he had to apologize ultimately.
He certainly did. He said, "Can't you reporters ask anything positive?" And, of course, Caitlin Collins just asked what you did, what was accomplished at the summit. I find it interesting that he would snap back at the correspondent for the network long known as the Clinton News Network, CNN. He later backed down, but he was also clearly grouchy when he was with reporters on the flight back. It should be pointed out, if Donald Trump had said this to a CNN reporter, he would be called a bully. He would be said that he lashed out. The president's handlers said that he was just tired and he had had a busy morning, and that was the reason why, and it was accepted pretty quickly. We'll see when this happens the next two or three times.
A lot of questions about the solo press conferences held by President Biden and President Putin versus a joint press conference. Your thoughts?
Well, last time Donald Trump had a joint press conference with Vladimir Putin after their summit, and some people, such as the president's advisor on Russia, Fiona Hill, said she wanted to set off a fire alarm or start screaming to interrupt it. I might add that Fred Flights, a White House staffer, sat next to her on the flight back after that summit, and she never said anything of the kind then. It all went well. Look, these kind of appearances are bound to draw criticism long after the fact. At the time, everyone was just simply in awe that for all the speculation about their relationship, Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin had a joint press conference and took questions pretty freely from reporters. Joe Biden was not taking a chance on being embarrassed by the Russian leader, so he went solo in the end. After a while, it's really not going to matter. What's going to matter is the action taken by the Russian leader, and that's something we all should be concerned about.
Question marks have been swirling around Joe Manchin, the Democratic senator from West Virginia with a heavily Republican electorate. And Joe Manchin has been a fly in the ointment for the progressives, along with Kristen Sinema. He and Kristen from Arizona kind of really wrenching the gearbox for a lot of the Biden administration and progressive agenda. There were stories this week, though, that he was moving toward some kind of resolution on SR1, and that Stacey Abrams, of course, the Georgia political activist, she was in agreement with Manchin. Where do you see that going, if anywhere?
Nowhere. The swingingest vote in the U.S. Senate is that of West Virginia's Senator Manchin. But he's also in a position, Rick, of damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. The Democratic left essentially called a truce with the moderate senator from West Virginia at Nancy Pelosi's urging. They were going to stop name-calling. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York was not going to brand him a racist because he was not enamored with voting reform. And then, as you say, Stacey Abrams and others came in. Well, Senator Manchin offered a compromise package, which still maintained the drop boxes that are so controversial and made it difficult to have partisan gerrymandering of congressional and legislative districts. Right away, Republicans shot the trial balloon down before it took off. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell said that this was totally unacceptable to all 50 of the Republican senators because it enhanced the hand of the federal government in management and regulation of elections. That's a no-no with Republicans. They want to leave it to the states and to localities. So it would just seem that based on the fact he cannot win, Joe Manchin is a man without a party. And all the things that he was so key to, election reform, infrastructure, the fate of the filibuster, are just simply not going to be dealt with, not in this Congress.
If SR1 were to pass by some strange occurrence, would that be tied up in the courts for years?
Probably, but normally on election legislation, the courts defer to the legislative branch and to the states as well. I would say, though, that that would be the logical course for Republican senators to take, as they did with the Affordable Care Act, and because it would be almost a foregone conclusion that a Democratic president would sign the bill. So it would be off to court we go for Republicans.
Well, you mentioned the former president. Looks like he's going to be getting busy pretty soon and actually teaming up with an interesting partner.
You're absolutely right. You're talking about Bill O'Reilly, until a few years ago, a fixture at Fox News with a big following. He's been laying low for a while, making occasional appearances, including on Newsmax TV. But now it would seem both Trump and O'Reilly are on the comeback trail. President Trump is billing this as an early joust at history and an early crack at how historians will deal with his presidency and his legacy. Bill O'Reilly is making his first step back into the limelight in a big way. So both hope they can benefit from this. I will say one thing, that usually the assessment of a president right after he leaves office doesn't count for much. So maybe President Trump is overreacting. He should remember that Harry Truman was considered a bad president when he left. People were saying to err is Truman. And yet he's remembered as one of the great post-war presidents and a player in the world after World War II. Similarly, George W. Bush booed as he left Washington when his successor came in, extremely low-key for a while, now continues to emerge, and the media likes him, at least in comparison to the next Republican to serve as president. So I will say that Donald Trump's judgment by history may have to wait well beyond the tour with Bill O'Reilly.
So what's up with Mike Pence and Mike Pompeo? We will find that out next. But first, Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On the Beltway in Virginia, on the inner loop and on the outer loop, there isn't any delays. You should find all lanes open, and you'll be traveling at the posted speed limit. On 66 in Fairfax County, on the eastbound side, there is a crash. Right lane is blocked near Centerville exit, exit 52. Also on the eastbound side of 66 in Fairfax County, it's jammed up between Route 50 and the Vienna Metro Station. And on 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, on the northbound side, all lanes are clear. And on the southbound side, there isn't any construction or any accidents to slow you down. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy, warm, and muggy today. We're expecting high temperatures back in the upper 80s under partly cloudy skies. We'll also have the possibility for some afternoon showers and storms. Some of them may be strong to severe, damaging winds, the primary threat. Later on tonight, some isolated storms possible, lows back around 70 degrees. For your Father's Day, partly cloudy skies, again the chance for some isolated afternoon storms. Keep the Stormwatch 7 app handy, otherwise hot and humid, highs around 90 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
74 degrees in the nation's capital, 722 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
On Monday, legal analyst Joe DiGenova on the final flurry of Supreme Court decisions, plus Mercedes Schlapp, O'Connor and Company, 5 to 9 a.m. on WMAL.
The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. We are talking with John Gizzi, White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Somebody else we haven't seen too much of, the former Vice President Mike Pence, but quite active on Friday in Kissimmee, Florida. Where was he and what was he talking about?
He was at the Faith and Freedom Coalition meeting. That's essentially the successor to the Christian Coalition, and it brings values voters together from throughout the country. One thing about the Vice President, he was always a favorite of this group himself, family man and born-again Christian. He was usually wildly applauded. This time there were occasional boos and cries of traitor, spicing the former Vice President's remarks. Why? Because many believe that by certifying the results of the election, he made it possible for Joe Biden to become president. On the other hand, it should be noted, as the former vice president has done frequently, that it was not within his power to do that. All he did was read the results of the Electoral College that had been sent into the Capitol. Somehow that doesn't resonate with some elements within the Republican Party, and he took the brunt of it.
The former Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, has been on television quite a lot recently, and there is a development that might fuel some speculation there?
Yes, the former Secretary of State has unveiled a political action committee, and he plans to go around and campaign for his friends and others who request him to make appearances. He's already done one talk for Congressman Don Bacon of Omaha, Nebraska, and he's expected to campaign for Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who is running for governor of Arkansas. And there's others on the list. I talked to Indiana's Attorney General Todd Rokita, a classmate of Mike Pompeo in the House. He's going to try to get him to the Hoosier State. What does all this mean? Well, it's pretty obvious. Mike Pompeo is collecting chits for a presidential bid of his own. The problem with that is that, like a lot of others who are close to Donald Trump, he has to wait and to see what the 45th president is going to do in 2024. For right now, people are giving warm welcomes, large crowds, and lots of money to the candidates who are blessed by the former Secretary of State. It's been a long time since the Secretary of State went on to serve as president. The last was James Buchanan in 1856.
You mentioned the campaign trail. Well, the former president, 45, has been out campaigning, and it's not for the incumbent.
No, it isn't. You're obviously talking about Alaska, where, to no one's surprise, Donald Trump came out four square against the leading Republican primary challenger to Senator Lisa Murkowski, former State Commissioner of Administration Kelly Shabaka. This is going to be an interesting contest. Lisa Murkowski lost a primary before and came back to become only the second person in history elected a U.S. Senator as a write-in candidate. Kelly Shabaka is an impressive campaigner, mother of five, graduate of Harvard Law, and someone who benefits from the Trump endorsement, as well as other conservatives who have long been fed up with Murkowski, going back to when her governor father appointed her to a Senate vacancy. I will say one thing that should be made clear on this, and that is that Donald Trump, when he says he'll get involved in a primary, whether it's against an incumbent or in a crowded field, he does so, and all expect he's going to put action behind his words with campaign appearances. So we may see him heading north very soon.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Thank you for an in-depth analysis this morning, John.
Thank you, Rick. And to all those out there who are fathers, please, I remember my own father with warmth and great love today. He's not here to be with me, but I hope many fathers are there with their sons and daughters and grandchildren and make this day so special.
Thank you, John. 727 Saturday Morning Update, WMAL. 7:30 News is coming up. Then we're back with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland, and we'll have a full assessment of President Biden's week in Europe all on the way.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Unemployment checks will be smaller for unemployed people in many states starting today. Fox's Jeff Manasso.
The states that are ending federal jobless benefits today, Alabama, Idaho, Indiana, and Nebraska, join New Hampshire, North Dakota, West Virginia, and Wyoming in ending extra federal jobless checks before they expire in September. Governors argue that benefits aren't needed in an economy recovery and as companies across the country report shortages of workers amid a surplus of help wanted signs. An additional 14 states will soon also end weekly $300 jobless bonuses.
Maryland will do that on July 3rd. Virginia will continue giving supplemental unemployment through September. People around the country are celebrating Juneteenth, the anniversary of when slaves in Galveston, Texas, got the news that they were free. It came 2.5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation took effect. President of the NAACP Loudoun Branch, Pastor Michelle Thomas.
We're hoping that in celebrating this, in telling the full comprehensive story of the Black American experience, that people will begin to really realize the dehumanization of slavery.
Celebrations in Loudoun start today at 9:30 at the courthouse. Mayors in 11 U.S. cities, including L.A. and Denver, want to pay reparations for slavery to some Black residents. The mayors have committed to form commissions to advise them on how to make that happen. WMAL Sports, the Nats beat the Mets 1-0. Traffic and weather next. WMAL Traffic, here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway, from Prince George's County through Montgomery County, bridge to bridge, no delays on the inner loop or on the outer loop. Traveling between the two beltways, on the BW Parkway and on 95, it's clear northbound and southbound. On Route 50 in Prince George's County, no delays between the beltway and Annapolis. At the Bay Bridge, two lanes are headed east and three lanes are coming west. And on 270 in Montgomery County, between the Beltway and Frederick, no reports of any slowdowns on the northbound side or on the southbound side. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy, warm, and muggy today. We're expecting high temperatures back in the upper 80s under partly cloudy skies. We'll also have the possibility for some afternoon showers and storms. Some of them may be strong to severe, damaging winds, the primary threat. Later on tonight, some isolated storms possible. Lows back around 70 degrees. For your Father's Day, partly cloudy skies. Again, the chance for some isolated afternoon storms. Keep the Stormwatch 7 app handy. Otherwise, hot and humid. Highs around 90 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
7:36, the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Happy Father's Day weekend, happy Juneteenth, and of course the first weekend of summer. We are joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, also the host of the Thought to Action podcast. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to be on with you.
Well, there's some news breaking overnight. We'll get to that in a minute, because when you start a meeting, you always start with the old business first. And that is, earlier in the week, the president in Europe, NATO, G7, and, of course, the meeting with Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
In terms of NATO and the G7 and our allies, the issue of China, and we've talked about this before. A lot of these countries have business relationships with China, very reliant on China. Did you see any progress in terms of the U.S. working with allies to put more pressure on China on so many of their aggressive actions?
Well, I think it's interesting that it was noted, but as you point out, there was really like no specifics provided of how they're going to do it. It's much like their approach to climate change, whether you believe it or not, they gave it lip service. And so I think it was a conference primarily of essentially posturing, of essentially showing that you care about stuff, but really coming up with no real path forward other than to state there's problems. And that's a huge issue with China. China as you point out, is economically tied to the interests of most of the countries because of the manufacturing, because of the different things that are going on. And what is notable where this all crosses over is Russia. You know, one of the things that Russia has been given advantage of, they have this new pipeline that'll be pumping gas into Central Europe, into Germany. And the Russians have been very friendly, very cozy with China, doing joint military exercises and looking at other things they can do to essentially be allies. I kind of call it, you know, back in the 70s, Nixon played the China card where against Russia, where they were able to leverage China, opening the door to China against the Soviet Union. And that was a very effective tool. I see Putin doing the same thing here, kind of playing the China card against Europe. So it's going to be a very interesting fall to see if anything comes out of it. Unfortunately, Rick, I just don't see the current national security staff of the White House being able to do much to really focus this potential effort of our allies.
All right, I want to read you a paragraph from Reuters this week. U.S. President Joe Biden told Russian President Vladimir Putin on Wednesday that certain critical infrastructure should be off limits to cyber attacks. Biden wasn't explicit about which areas he wanted out of bounds, but spoke of 16 kinds of infrastructure, an apparent reference to the 16 sectors designated as critical by U.S. Homeland Security Department. That, according to Reuters. So there are 16 areas, but what about all of the other U.S. corporations, businesses, and services we rely on? How do you tell Putin, well, don't mess with these 16? I mean, is that giving him a free ticket to go ahead and attack anything else he wants to?
That's an interpretation I think many have taken away. And I think Putin's laughing. I could see him on the flight back to Moscow just laughing his butt off. This is serious. I mean, Nancy Pelosi would have instantly launched into articles of impeachment had Donald Trump shared with Vladimir Putin 16 targets that he could know. He knows for a fact because DHS told the president that these are critical to our interests. So, and I don't believe for a minute, knowing how Vladimir Putin operates, that they're going to do anything except continue to target them and then do what we call false flags. Make it look like a third country did it and say, oh, well, gee, we didn't do it. We have no idea. That's how crazy this is. And again, let me be very clear on this. I believe this is impeachable. And I don't want to sound over the top on this, but when you have someone at that level providing key strategic information to an adversary, it's not a small thing. And, then the interpretation is, well, did the president get the green light for everything else? What does that mean for industry? What does that mean for businesses which depend on the Internet, which then have to run their systems, their enterprise, off of this access to all this digital paths that the Russians can do something to compromise? So it's just unwise at best, criminally incompetent at worst. And I don't know. I have no other way to put it except in those terms.
Wouldn't the smarter approach to have been to say, you do not attack any U.S. entities, infrastructure, businesses, anything U.S., you don't attack it with ransomware, and you make sure these thugs in your country don't do it either. But
one would have thought. One would have thought.
That's too simple.
Exactly.
That's too simple. Yeah. Hey, let's turn to some overnight news from Iran. Ibrahim Reisi, a hardline judiciary chief with a brutal human rights record, set to win Iran's controversial presidential election. Raisi is currently under U.S. sanctions, and I guess things aren't going to change in terms of the U.S. and Iran, at least in terms of their leadership.
Yeah, so the Iranians have been a bit quieter in their rhetoric and many of the things they were doing after we assassinated Soleimani in Iraq, and I think that that sent a signal that we, the United States, were going to be very steadfast in our holding to a number of things to hold them accountable. That, I think, is going to change now, both because the Biden administration and this guy's coming in. I think you're going to see a lot more very vicious rhetoric, a lot more aggressive actions. I think we talked about, if not we didn't talk about in the air, I think we talked about the Iranians putting a frigate into the Atlantic, actually running around trying to show that they have they're expanding their military prowess. And so that's something we have to be concerned about. And Rick, I do believe, and while the Trump administration never said it, the Biden administration I'm sure will never say it, a real mistake was made in 2009 when we failed to support the green revolution of the Iranian people. And I believe the best path forward to stop them from being a state sponsor of terror, to stop them from developing the nuclear weapons, is encourage their own people, the Persian people, to rise up and throw off the theocracy and become a democracy. There's no doubt that most democracies do not seek to trouble their neighbors. And I think we should encourage the Iranian people to seek democracy, to find a way to have their own revolution, a Persian revolution, if you will, and move forward. But I think this election was a sham. It's just a reinforcement of the theocracy and their control over the Iranian people.
Yeah, apparently 48% of the electorate came out, and that's dropped significantly since the last time they had an election in 2017. So
yeah, there's not much interest in voting for the same strongman over and over. You know, it is what it is.
Hey, you host the Thought to Action podcast at LondonCenter.org. What are you talking about these days?
So we're actually going to be talking about an editorial I did regarding holding China accountable, regarding what was in the Epoch Times. It talks about stopping coddling Hollywood. It talks about the recent issue with Cena, John Cena, and his taking the knee to China. We'll be doing some interviews with some folks to talk about more about that over the next few days. I'm going to try to land a Hollywood celebrity to join me on that. I'm trying to work on getting her on board. So we'll see if we have that up by next week.
Excellent. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, LondonCenter.org. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Rick.
Our pleasure. 7:45, it is the Saturday morning update on WMAO. We've got KT McFarland coming up next. We'll get her read on the Vladimir Putin-Joe Biden meeting. But first, we're off to the WMAO Traffic Center, and Albie D is there this morning.
Right now on the Virginia side of the Beltway, you'll find all the lanes open on the inner loop and on the outer loop. On 66 in Centerville, eastbound, accident, right lane is blocked near 29, the Centerville exit. Also on eastbound side of 66, it's jammed up between the Fair Oaks exit and 123. And on the westbound side of 66, there is a crash. Two left lanes are blocked just west of the Fairfax County Parkway exit 55. And finally, on 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, no delays northbound or southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy, warm, and muggy today. We're expecting high temperatures back in the upper 80s under partly cloudy skies. We'll also have the possibility for some afternoon showers and storms. Some of them may be strong to severe, damaging winds, the primary threat. Later on tonight, some isolated storms possible, lows back around 70 degrees. For your Father's Day, partly cloudy skies. Again, the chance for some isolated afternoon storms. Keep the Stormwatch 7 app handy, otherwise hot and humid, highs around 90 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
73 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:46 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL. It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Happy Father's Day weekend. Happy Juneteenth and happy first weekend of summer. And we are happy to be joined by KT McFarland. She is President Trump's first Deputy National Security Advisor. She is the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, it's always an honor to have you join us.
It's an honor and a pleasure for me, too.
Well, thank you. And last week, KT, we talked about an opinion piece that you had written at Fox News. And the headline on that one was, Biden's European Grand Tour is full of opportunities for U.S. leadership. Will he seize them? You've also written an opinion piece that will appear at thehill.com tomorrow. The headline, What's Biden Look Like to Putin? A Tough Guy or an Easy Target? The Biden administration and most of the media proclaiming the president's European grand tour a great success. But as a White House Deputy National Security Advisor, you know more about it than the pundits. What stands out to you about the president's meeting with Vladimir Putin?
Well, I think that in the entire trip, he had two goals. First was to rally the European trade and security partners to join with us and stand together against Russia, you know, Russian adventurism, Chinese trade abuses. And second, when he got to Putin at the end, it was to convince Putin that his shenanigans will be met with swift and painful consequences. I don't think he succeeded in doing it either. In fact, I think he failed even worse than I thought he would. You know, in the first round with the European leaders, they couldn't muster anything more than just sort of a milquetoast statement about Russia and a milquetoast statement about China, and asking the World Health Organization, of all places, to do yet another study, this time transparent, about the origin of the coronavirus. And the problem was that the European nations really aren't on the same page. The Chinese buy a lot of cars from Germany, and Germany wants to buy a lot of natural gas from Russia. So Germany, this sort of major power in continental Europe, doesn't really want to have a tough stand against China or Russia. And so I think that part of it was a failure. And then when Biden got down with Putin, oh boy, I mean, you know, I think that the die was already cast. Look, in April, Putin warned Biden, keep American vessels out of the Black Sea, and Biden meekly complied. And then the Russians massed troops along Ukraine's border. Biden responded with a strong statement, and now we find out, at least according to some press reports, that Biden responded by cutting and withholding aid to Ukraine, almost like an open invitation to Putin to get into trouble with Ukraine. And then in May and June, when the Russian hackers held the American energy and food industries hostage until ransom was paid, Biden didn't hold Putin to account. His press secretary blamed the American companies for failing to protect themselves, you know, blame the victim. And then I think that the biggest mistake Biden made prior to the summit was by lifting those sanctions against the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Russia now has an economic lifeline at a windfall profits of selling energy, natural gas, and oil to the Germans. But Russia also now has a whip hand on the German economy. They can turn that pipeline on and off whenever they feel like it to get what they want. And then what makes me the most upset is that as they were sitting down in Geneva, the Russians were mounting their largest military exercise since the end of the Cold War, amassing warships and bombers right up to the territorial waters of Hawaii. I mean, what a slap in the face. So I look at all those things and say, you know, it was a failure. And then when you saw the two press conferences, the dueling press conferences, I thought, you know, much as I hate to admit it, I thought Putin did a pretty good job. He was deflecting, diverting. He was dispensing Russian disinformation unchallenged by the media or anybody else. And yet when Biden had his conference a few minutes later and he said, well, I've given him a list of 16 critical American industries that are off limits to Russian cyber attacks. They're going to be our red line. Well, what does Putin think? What about 17, 18, 19, and the rest? I guess there's no consequence. And then altogether, I've got to wonder if Putin isn't thinking, maybe this is my opportunity. I'll make a move against Ukraine. I'll go for 1 through 16 to do cyberware attacks. I mean, I think he's given Putin a lot to think about, but I don't think it's necessarily that Putin's nervous about us. He's trying to calculate how far I can push it.
Contrast Biden with Putin versus Trump with Putin.
Well, you know, Trump said a lot of nice things about Putin, but then he was really very hard line on the policies towards Russia. He imposed sanctions on the Russians. He stopped the gas pipeline, the Nord Stream 2, and he gave lethal weapons to Ukraine to fight Russian forces on the border. So while Trump says a lot of stuff and says a lot of different stuff, you know, one day says this, the next day says that, the policies themselves, which were not lost on Putin, were quite firm. Compare that to the Biden comments where he calls Putin a killer or a tough adversary, but yet he kind of gives in to him at every stage. I think if Donald Trump had that summit meeting scheduled for Geneva and found out as he was walking in to shake Putin's hand that the Russians had just launched a massive military exercise off the coast of Hawaii, I think Trump would have turned on his heel and said, thank you very much, I'm getting on a plane, no reason to meet with you, I'm going back to increase American defense spending.
So we're concerned about Putin and possible moves on eastern Ukraine, but what is the messaging to China from all of this? As you see Biden with Putin, what does that say to China?
Well, I think China's always said, you know, it's sort of in everybody's back of everybody's mind. So if the Chinese, and I think the Chinese and the Russians indeed are working together, whether they're having, you know, late night phone calls between Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin, I don't know about that, but they're clearly signaling their moves to each other. Because while the Russians were massing a military exercise off of Hawaii, the Chinese were overflying a large number of bombers and aircraft over Taiwan. I think that they're both countries are looking at Biden and think, how far can we push him? This may be our golden moment. You know, international affairs is always like sharks. It's like Shark Week. It's when the sharks smell blood in the water and they sense weakness. They all swarm around the victim and they each take their chunk, figuring this is their moment. And I think that the Russians are looking at the weakness that Biden is portraying. I think that the Chinese are looking at the weakness Biden is portraying, and especially that first meeting between the American and Chinese leaders in Alaska a couple of months ago where the Chinese lectured us, and then the American Secretary of State apologized. They say, well, America's not perfect. I mean, that's, you know, that they all express like a lot of weakness. One thing I really hope is that that President Biden does not have a similar summit meeting with the Chinese president. Because if he looks weak against Biden and Russia, and then Biden looks weak against China, then it really does feed into the narrative the Chinese are peddling to the world, that America's days are finished, that America's old and tired and weak, and China is the wave of the future.
K.T. McFarland, author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. And K.T.'s latest opinion piece will be posted at thehill.com tomorrow. And it's entitled, What's Biden Look Like to Putin? A Tough Guy or an Easy Target? K.T., as always, thank you so much.
Thank you for the privilege.
Our pleasure. And that's it for the Saturday morning update. It's 7:58. Garden Sense follows the 8 o'clock news, and have a happy Father's Day weekend.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station.